Blog Talk Radio. Hello, I'm sorry. Sorry about that, guys. We had some issues there. As I was saying, I have this week I just went through a whole spiel. Didn't even realize that it wasn't broadcasting. I'm sorry. Thanks, guys, for sticking with me. As I was saying, we're going to be talking about getting updates about the movie Skookum, The Hunt for Bigfoot. I have Debbie King McMartin here with me. Mike Woolley was supposed to be with us also. Unfortunately, he had an emergency come up. He wasn't able to make it. I'm also going to have my co-host tonight, Melissa Peacock. She's going to be on here with us. I want to give some plugs real quick if I can. First, to my friend Jason Shanaman. He's a sculptor. He sculpts primates, in particular Sasquatch. He has some Sasquatch bust, some not life size, but full body Sasquatch statuettes. Go check him out. I posted his link to his store over on Onyx Knights Paranormal Facebook page. Also, want to give a shout out to my friend Gene St. Gene. He is a sculptor of action figures. He has an upcoming line of cryptid action figures due out in December. The price range is going to be $20 to $25. I have an album on the Onyx Knights Paranormal page full of images. I've seen what he's got in the works. They're going to be 8 to 9 inch tall action figures. I've seen what's coming out. I've seen a little bit ahead, and he and I have talked about certain future characters. It's a cryptid line. It's being put out by Creature Replica, and he's got right now. He's got Sasquatch, North American Sasquatch, Himalayan Yeti, and a Whorehound. And I've also seen Debbie action figure that he's got for a Skookum, which is
Wow.
Sasquatch, of course, but it's a different, it's got a little different, slightly different look. And this guy's not new to all this. He's actually been sculpting action figures for a long time. He did a lot of work for Todd McFarlane, with Movie Maniacs. He's done a lot of Marvel Select action figures, a few of which I have of all that. So it's going to be real exciting come September. I'm sorry, fall, when these things start hitting the market. And I'm gonna try also to get him on the show in the future. Okay, that's the advertising. That's enough of my advertising. Debbie, let's go ahead and talk. Where are you at right now? Hold on a second. I got a call. I think it might be Mike calling back in.
Okay.
Hello? Hello, you're on the air. Hello, caller. Hey, Mike, is that you? Well, it was his number, but I'm not sure. Debbie, you still with me?
I'm still with you.
Okay. Go ahead and tell us. I'm really excited about the movie. I remember you were on the show previously, and you had told us that it was due out sometime between that show and summer. Is that still the time frame that we're hoping to?
Well, probably it's going to, we hope that it's sometime between now and the end of summer. I know we keep pushing it back, but we discovered, and we may have mentioned this last time, but it became very obvious to us that there was some things that were missing. There was some tension that was missing from it. And we came to the conclusion that it was due to, we didn't have enough Bigfoot point of view. We had some shots, like down in the bushes where one of our lead characters is walking through the woods, where
Right.
we're using that for Bigfoot point of view. But we actually decided as a team that we needed distance shots, like anywhere from 30 to 50 to
Oh.
even 100 feet away, that is actually from the Bigfoot point of view. He's hiding behind the trees, but he's watching these different things as they are taking place.
That's awesome because you and I talked about that privately.
Yes, and I think that the last time that I did the radio show that we were actually getting ready that weekend to do a pickup, some pickup shots that Saturday down at the staging area of where we originally shot the film. And we actually did do that. And it was difficult in some ways because there was high water there at that time. That was in April, which is that exactly a year from the time we shot the movie from Principal Photography. So,
this year, though, the
water was up high. So it had changed, and we had very little land to work with. And a lot of the original places where we had shot the scenes where we were going to shoot these pickup shots from 50 to 100 feet away, they were underwater. So we had to improvise and do a few things differently. But we did get some good shots. We got Mike Woolley in his camo out in the woods. We got a shot of him looking through his rifle at Skookum. And of course we'll use digital special effects to go in there and emulate what Mike saw in regard to the creature's eyes that he said were staring at him with such a, that's what we're going for. So we've got that. And that's what's going to create this tension, creating these scenes from the Bigfoot point of view. And going back and doing the pickup shots are going to add to the film what it was missing. And like I told you before, I know we're anxious to get it out, and we know our great fans are anxious to get it out, but we're not going to put it out before we know it is everything that it can be and before it's ready.
Yeah.
Because, we're just maybe perfectionistic in some respects, but that's... It's like with anything else.
Yes.
If you put it out before it's ready, you can never have another chance again to make that great first impression with the audience. And so, we know it's within months, so I think it's worth all of our, all of us need to have patience so that we can get it where it wants to be, itself wants to be. It takes on a life of its own. It's not quite there yet, but it's coming along, and the process is exciting because we did the first pickup shot. Then the second one, we had to find another staging area because the place that we used to film virtually is underwater now. In fact, the residents had to evacuate and move out of their houses because there's one dirt road that leads to the swamp back there, and it was covering with water. So they were evacuated, and they're still not able to get back. So everything that we filmed there last year is underwater. We were very fortunate to have done this movie last year. So when the water was, everything was perfect conditions at that time. So we're blessed for that. But this year we had to, we did those first shots that weekend after we were on your show, and we improvised, and then it was no longer available for us to film there. So 2 weeks ago, we went to an area that's about 2 miles down the road from that, and it was great. It worked out extremely well. We got some wonderful pickup shots at night, and Skookum, going up and hiding behind trees and watching houses, and Skookum chasing some chickens and all kinds of special little shots. And we're going to emulate what Steven Spielberg did with Jaws. I think we talked about this on your last show.
When they filmed
Jaws, they spent millions of dollars building this enormous shark.
And it didn't work.
And they got it out in the water during production, and the thing sank to the bottom of the ocean. It was just like millions of dollars literally down the drain. So they had to improvise quickly. And what they did was they sent a cameraman down underwater with a protected camera, and they got the shots from Jaws' point of view. And then they added that scary music that every time we hear, you know, chills go up and down our spine, and it was like we know the shark is coming. We're in the shark's point of view. Boom, 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 boom. And so we're planning to do that same type of filming and combined with some kind of special music that's going to signify, okay, the Sasquatch. And then overlay that with growls and heavy breathing and whistles and these typical sounds that people report hearing from Sasquatch creatures. So we're going to, we've got three overlays. We've got the distance shot in the Sasquatch point of view filtered over in red, which is kind of matches our poster image, and that is when the audience knows that Skookum is watching and waiting. And then the music comes over, and then the sound, the animal sound.
If you could find some theme music, I think with more of a Native American style, with like some chanting, I think that would be so perfect.
Uh-huh.
For that.
Yeah. And that would be that would be in keeping with our film too, because we actually have a Native American shaman character in the film, which is played by David Joseph Martinez, and who is a seasoned actor. He's in a lot of the Sylvester Stallone films, and
yes,
he played Sante Cloud, who's a Native American in our film. Talks about how his particular Native American tribe reveres the Sasquatch, and that the reported the number of sightings, increased sightings in recent years, have signified that that the people are in arrears of their environment and not respecting the environment, and that the Sasquatch is sending them that message, and that's one of the things that happens. So that's incorporated in our film as well, to bring that element into it respectfully.
Melissa, are you on the air also?
Yes.
Okay. Guys, listeners, I have to say that I and Melissa were able to watch an 11-minute, Debbie, you sent it to me. Melissa was here when I watched it.
Yes.
An 11-minute short, I guess a demo reel, correct?
It's a sample scene reel from the film.
And yeah, let me tell you, I liked what I saw. It looks really, really good. Albeit it was just a short little, you know, reel, it was enough to make me want to see more of it.
Oh, well, good. Well, that was the general purpose of the demo reel, is to just kind of work as a teaser and entice people to want to see more elements of the film.
Now, on a previous show, you had mentioned sequels, and we kind of talked about it a little bit before this show started. How far are you involved in that? I know that you guys said that I will be in it, and playing a Sasquatch.
Definitely.
You have the suit.
Right.
But how, other than that, how far are you into that process? Are you writing a script? Is a script written?
It actually is 75% completed. And I have not been involved in that process. My co-writer for Skookum script, Lynn Morgan, has been working on that diligently for the last probably 8 months. And she's very close to being in the end stretch on that particular script. And we'll have a lot of the same characters. Oh, yeah, a lot of the same characters.
So looking forward to that. That's going to be awesome. Another reason why I'm looking forward to it is because I'm about to start up a division of my paranormal team over in North Texas.
Okay.
And they're going to be they're just strictly going to be cryptids, and they're going to be specializing in that whole Falk, Arkansas, Boggy Creek area. So,
right.
We're going to eventually have a big get together, and you know, I know you're in that area, so, and then the movie I believe is being shot in that area as well. So it's going to be a great time. I'm almost certain.
Now, well, you know, that is that corridor area, all the way from Falk, Arkansas to Jefferson, Texas, pretty much Bigfoot Alley. I mean, there have been so many reported sightings, you know, some of them anonymous, but because the people didn't want to risk ridicule.
Right.
They have been reported. You can find them online. In fact, I've got a stack of papers from actually one of the woman that owns a property that we did the pickup shots at last time actually compiled that for me because she was just interested in all those statistics. And you can follow a line up there, Falk, Arkansas, Atlanta, Texas, all the way to Jefferson, which I guess as the crow flies would be about 30 miles, a good 30-mile stretch there.
Right.
From about maybe more, maybe 60 miles. Maybe it might be twice that much. I'm not very good at calculating that. From
the guy who's going to be heading the guy who's going to be heading that division. His name's Johnny Holmes. He'll be. I think he's going to call in probably whenever we're done with this, you know, hour session.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have him on. But you know, I'm getting more and more and more involvement over there in that area. I'm getting
right.
People just come out of the woodworks and say, "Hey, man, we got to get you down here. And I mean, it's really just a hop and a skip for me. I'm in Mississippi, but I got definitely arrangements to get over there. In fact, when you and I had talked, we talked after the last show in private. And mm-hmm. I was telling you about the area here. I actually took some pictures for you, and I tagged you in them on my Facebook to show you mm-hmm. this area here and show you for filming purposes, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
It looks
I'm done.
Here.
Those are amazing. Mm-hmm.
But
amazing.
Yeah, I'm really excited about all of this. I mean, you know me. You know I've talked so many times in private and on
right.
the show. And I'm willing to do whatever I got to do to help out in any way possible.
One of the things too that I wanted to bring up tonight on your show because I thought it was relevant, and that is we really want to do more of the interviews to put on the extras of the film, and more people like to. Use your words, are coming out of the woodwork. In fact, when we did these pickup shots 2 weeks ago,
uh-huh.
the woman that owns the property there where we did the shots, which, like I say, was 2 miles from the staging area where we originally filmed Skookum production, and her son was there. And he was actually serving as one of the doubles because he looks very much like one of the characters that we needed to double for to match his clothes and everything from a distance. And he came up to me and he said, I had an experience when I was 10 years old. And it was out on Cattle Lake, you know, where we filmed. And he said, I was at the top bunk of our cabin, you know, our camp cabin. And he said, I was on the top bunk. And he said, I looked out the window and there was a face staring in at me that looked like a monkey's face with hair all over him, and he said that thing had to be really, really tall, like at least 8 or 9 foot, to be look at me square in that window from the top bunk, you know.
Right.
And he said, I thought my heart was going to come out of my chest, and I started screaming, and I jumped off the top of the bunk, and I ran into my parents' bed, and I jumped in the middle of them. And he said, and I just screamed and screamed, there's a monkey man out there, there's a monkey man out there. So he is going to do an interview for the extra part of the film on his experience, and his mom confirmed that actually happened, you know, down again on Cattle Lake where we filmed.
Well, I'm sure
and that's
if
in that, that's in that corridor stretch between South Arkansas and Jefferson, Texas.
Yeah. I'm sure if you actually wanted more of those, I'm sure we could get those. I mean, you know, all we have to do is kind of make a post or something like that, you know.
And it would be great if we could have people that, that had the experiences, you know, particularly in and around the area that we filmed. South Arkansas, Caddo. I mean, there's a lot of people that have never come forward because they, again, feared ridicule or they thought people were going to think they were crazy. And they're now coming forward. I know Mike, Woolley, and I did a radio show last night, and there was a guy on there named Doyle who had been listening to the Blog Talk radios, you know, the Bigfoot radio shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said that he said he had an experience over in and around Atlanta, Texas, again in that same corridor area, and he said that Mike gave him the confidence to come out and talk about his experience in detail.
And that's
great.
Which
is,
I mean, that's
which
what,
is the beauty of all this.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to, you know, I know me personally, I can't speak for everyone else, but me personally, trying to get more people to come out so we can actually share our experiences, and
right.
I think together,
mm-hmm.
collectively, we can kind of figure out a lot more about these beings, you know,
right.
by sharing the knowledge
right.
that we all have.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and the stories are so similar, the details are so similar, and I would say that Atlanta, Texas is probably like 100, 125 miles from where Mike had his encounter.
Well,
so that's not that far. That's not that far off.
I'm going to do this for you, Debbie. You know, guys, if you're listening, I'm going to soon be involved with all this also. So if you are in that area, the Falk, Arkansas, the North Texas, Texarkana, if you're in that
uh-huh.
area and you've had the experience, contact me or through my personal Facebook page, Brian Sons, or contact Debbie King McMartin. You can send your information on my Onyx Nights Paranormal page. I will make sure that Debbie or Mike or both get the information.
That sounds good. That sounds
Debbie,
good.
I will relay all that to you, and because I know I have several friends who are probably listening right now in that area who've had some things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I know at least five right off the top of my head.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now,
that's awesome.
Now, when you were on the show the last time, were you able to hear, did you hear the one about the encounter that me and Melissa had here in Mississippi with the roar?
Yes, I did. Yes, that you were out there and you heard it, and she wanted to run, and you said no, or yeah, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, that was. I went back out there about a week ago.
Yeah, it was about a week ago.
Yeah, I went back out there about a week ago, and I went there by myself. I didn't hear a roar, but I heard what sounded like I can only describe it as chimpanzee chatter, and I believe I got it on audio. I just haven't had a chance to
mm-hmm.
sit down and review it. But
mm-hmm.
it started out about 75 yards in front of me, and then in no time, it was to the side of me, and then it was behind me in no time. In less than a minute, it moved a football field.
Wow.
And, you know, because I was out there by myself. I kind of creeped myself out when I was out there because I'd heard the roar with Melissa, and that was scary in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, mm-hmm. and I don't even think I told you this, Melissa, but in my mind when I was out there, I kept remembering that roar.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I remember how it felt, and I'm like, I know
mm-hmm.
something is out here. So I kind of creeped myself out even more because I was out there by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm gonna go through that audio and I'm pretty sure I caught it. I played a little bit of it for Melissa and she kinda heard it, so I'm gonna have to go and amplify it a little bit more and post that. I mean, I go out and Melissa can tell you because I bug her to go with me all the time. I go out at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Not
more.
Wow. Well, yeah, and I've got some audio, too, from a tape that we took down in central Louisiana, way out in the boonies. And these two women had been had actually been terrorized by one. And I'm going to walk you out. We put a tape recorder up on top of the chicken house, and we actually recorded some audio of the roar, but it had the buzzing in it. So, but I found an app on the internet that can supposedly take that buzzing out, which would make that roar really get. I mean, it would make it sound clearly. I'm gonna try to get that done.
Yeah, because on the ones that I posted, originally there was a lot of walking and crunching, and then I went on a program and used a noise removal, and it removes all that walking, crunching sound, but it did keep all the, you know, the howls and whatever. I wish that I'd had all my audio on that night, but again, like I said before, we weren't expecting anything on the walk back to where we wanted to go. But now, in hindsight, I know from now on, when the minute I get in those woods, my audio is going on. See, there's a lot of debates going on right now about Sasquatch, whether they're violent or nonviolent.
And I think it just depends on the circumstances. I mean, I think that if they feel threatened by when Mike Woolley encountered the Sasquatch, they felt threatened. He was in their house. What would we do if we had an intruder come in our house?
Well,
we would probably be fairly violent. we would feel threatened by them. So,
if you remember on our previous show, me and Mike were discussing the fact that he had the gun, and there's been a lot of discussions about that here lately on different pages that I've been on. Me personally, I think the gun makes a major difference in their temperament, because when Melissa and I were out there, she said it before too. We didn't feel in danger, more as when that thing. I mean, it was at least 50 yards away from us. We didn't feel in danger more as we felt warned. You know, it was. Because we were walking on grass. We had walked through some big puddles, and we were walking on grass, and then it went from grass to, like, oak leaves, and it started crunching. I remember telling Melissa, if there's anything out here, it's going to know we're here now. And not as soon as I said that, this thing roared. So when we walked, we actually made a curve behind where it roared from. We had already passed where it was. So we think it didn't. You know, didn't know we were there until we made the crunchy. And that's another thing, another discussion that's going on is, does Sasquatch have a more advanced sense of smell than us? You know, as far as like in comparison to a deer or a dog, I don't think they do. I think theirs is just a little bit better than ours.
I think they probably have a sensing device that probably goes beyond smell, and it maybe infrasound or ultrasound capabilities. But I think that, like infrasound or ultrasound, it's probably something that they can turn on or turn off at will. And if they're just gallivanting through the woods, they're not normally going to have their antennas up for that.
Because see, that's the thing. Because I know they don't expect a human to be out there at night, you know. So they're probably
They're not going to expect
from
that
their
at
point
all.
Of, from their point of view, they're probably thinking, "What are these idiots doing out here in the dark?" You know, referring to us. But we were also trying intentionally to walk very quietly, and. I mean, and Melissa can tell you, we really feel like we surprised it. It was such, and I told Melissa this before. I said, you know, we experienced something that not many people in the world can say they have experienced.
Right.
You know, right. In their lifetime. But back to what I said, I don't think, okay, they're not breathing in all the chemical crap like we humans are. You know, they're not drowning out their ears with all the noise that we humans are. So yeah, their capabilities are going to be more advanced than ours.
Right.
You know,
their animal instincts.
Exactly. We actually damage ourselves. But you know, like me and Mike Woolley spoke on the last show. Just being hunters, even humans, you know, if you've been in the woods long enough, you know when someone else is in those woods and when someone else is around.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
You just get that vibe, and, you know, and generally humans aren't quiet when they go anywhere. So,
right.
You know, it's not far-fetched for them to be able to know where we are, when we are, in the hide. I mean, the other night,
right.
I went walking down this new area, and
mm-hmm.
I kept hearing what sounded like heavy footfall on the gravel road behind me, like going just back and forth, but keeping pace with me. And I would stop and shine my light back, wouldn't see anything. And then one time I looked up, and right there, 15 feet from me on the side of the road, was a fawn, a baby deer, just standing there.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it got me thinking, like I mentioned to you before the show, it got me thinking how close you can get to an animal without knowing they're there. Because generally,
right.
they will stay still, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If, right. if you surprise them and get that close to them, then their natural reaction is going to be just to be perfectly still.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
That got me thinking in relation to Sasquatch. And we've talked about this before. How many times they must have been real close to humans, and humans never even possibly knew about it.
Right.
That could have happened so many times.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely.
But and see that's
and you know we've lost so many of our animal instincts because of our civilized nature.
Well,
yeah, we don't use our instincts. They get blunted or. You know, soft,
yeah,
so to speak.
Exactly.
Just like
you know,
a muscle. If we don't use them.
Yeah, just think about all the chemicals and smells that you encounter in just one day.
Right.
You know, now think mm-hmm. on the lines of Sasquatch. They're out there in the wilderness breathing clean, fresh air 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, they're going to have a greater sense of smell. They're going to have better hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So... It just makes sense, you know. We're not
right.
We're not the top of the game. We have technology, yes, but you know, when it comes to pure on survival, no, we lost that edge a long time ago.
Yes, we did. And maybe this is what they're trying to teach us. Maybe they're trying to teach us something.
You know, there's so many.
Or send us a message.
Yeah,
there's so many. That is not beyond my scope of belief.
At this point in time. Yeah, I can see that. There's so many. There's so much debate about their origins, and sometimes
right.
it gets really, really ugly. And I look at it and I'm like. The problem is everyone has a belief, everyone has a theory, and everyone thinks that their belief and theory is right. So when you got
mm-hmm.
when you got person A thinking that his theory is right and person B thinking their theory is right, you know, and the two are clashing,
mm-hmm.
you know, here's the thing.
Right.
No, at this point in time, nobody is right because we don't know with 100% certainty. No one has been out there, say like Jane Goodall with the chimpanzees. No one has been out there spending time with these things and observing them and recording it. Maybe big government, who knows? But you know, mm-hmm. all of this is just anecdotal speculation. You know, to get mad at someone
right.
for saying what they believe versus what you believe. You don't even know if what you believe is 100% true. Not you, of course, Debbie, but
exactly.
in general. You know. And,
oh,
and
I know, but
just
you know when you come across people, and this has been my whole experience. I knew I wanted to do a Bigfoot movie before I ever met Mike Woolley or ever met anyone who had any kind of personal encounter. Because it gripped something inside of me. Well, there was some instinct there that was leading me down this path toward learning, researching, and understanding these creatures. But I just know there was something in me that wanted to know more. There was something in me before I ever heard anybody's personal stories that knew there was a truth to this. Well, that's coming from somewhere. That's coming from some instinct. And
well, you know, it's
and as we moved along, it grew and grew and grew. And I knew when I heard Mike Woolley's story, I knew he was telling the truth. I have no doubt.
Yeah,
we should know he had experienced what he did.
For listeners that didn't catch the previous shows, the movie Skookum, The Hunt for Bigfoot. Is based on Mike Woolley's personal encounter, correct?
Yes, it is based. That is the nucleus of the story, and Mike's whole experience with bringing people in, like Dr. Meldrum, who lent credibility to the project through his own research, because we wanted this story to be viable. Now, of course, Mike Woolley's story in and of itself would not be lengthy enough to make a whole movie out of
right.
his
right.
brief experience, brief though profound experience in time with this creature, and or those creatures, because I mean he actually saw several.
And, yeah.
But we based it on what the elements of that experience were, and what we perceived. That Sasquatch is, in general, based on that experience.
Well,
and that is, I mean, the story is, of course, embellished, but the core of it is the truth, and it's plausible, and respectful, and scary. I mean, we had to have entertainment value here. This is an independent. Narrative feature film. We had to bring in it's essentially in the horror film genre because it's scary in the same vein as Legend of Boggy Creek. Okay, we paid homage to Legend of Boggy Creek through Skookum, The Hunt for Bigfoot.
I actually watched.
And when we say hunt for Bigfoot, we don't mean hunting to go out to kill. We mean. Hunting Bigfoot, so the understanding, the hunt for the truth, and the hunt in this specific story, as far as the storyline goes, for this television celebrity psychologist to find her sister, who is her only family member still alive, who is missing in the swamps of Louisiana because she's gone on a research expedition, and she's missing. And she and Anna, the protagonist of the story, does not feel like these, you know, small town, the police force are doing their job. And so she gets teamed together to go out to find her sister. And therein lies the motivation for the story. Because she thinks Sasquatch has, you know, she thinks that there's some kind of element that Sasquatch has maybe killed her sister.
Right, right. And it sounds really, really interesting. You know, what to you, in your opinion, is the fascination people have with the whole Sasquatch legend. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a fact that I think there's always. I think that there's a basic element in human nature that there is a compelling drive to discover the unknown, you know, the mystery. And there have been so many reported sightings, and yet Sasquatch is still, as yet of this day, an unidentified creature, whether it be part human, animal, whatever. It is yet to be identified, and yet there's so many, you know, elements that lead to the truth of it. You know, all these stories, all these people that have had experiences that are scared to go back in the woods. I mean, you know, but yet it's a mystery, and it's just like maybe going to outer space. There's some kind of, there's just this mystery and intrigue in the unknown. And I think that also there's something compelling about a creature that's yet unidentified, and yet so many people are reported seeing and experiencing it, that is so human-like. You know, is this the missing link? And there's something familial about that. You know, and then maybe there's another element of what is the creature trying to teach us? And that's the part that intrigues me, and maybe I'm just alone enough, I don't know, but have we gotten so far from nature that we are missing so many parts of ourselves? Because we talked about this on your show last time. When I go into the woods and feel the elements, I feel alive again. And yeah. I knew this many, many years ago. I'd even walk into somebody's house who had a lot of plants, just, you know, houseplants around, and I would feel so, I'd feel differently. I'd feel good because it was nature. And these plants, you know, somehow they speak to you. You feel differently when you're surrounded by nature. And I think that these creatures, that's how they live. Those are their houses. And I'm a little envious of that, because you can feel the difference when you're in a plastic house filled with plastic plants. They don't give you the same kind of energy that you get when you walk into a house or you walk into a garden, you know, with a fountain and different kind of plants surrounding you, and you just feel good. You feel energized and vitalized, and I think this animal element, this element of the wild that we've lost touch with in ourselves, that to be fully human and fully alive, we need to reconnect with. And to me, that somehow seems to be a part of this.
You know, it's interesting. I think for me personally, I think it's the freedom that they represent. And there's the whole mystery of how did we get so far away from them? If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, we have all the technology, but we've kind of lost our spirit along the way.
Right.
If that makes sense. And another thing for me is the fact that they're out there and they're doing it without all this technological stuff, without, you know, I mean, they have a great life, in my opinion. You know, they're out there in the most beautiful scenery in the world. You know, they don't have to worry about bills or all this other drama stuff. You know, all they have to worry about is surviving. And to me, that's intriguing.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And, you know.
Yeah, because they don't worry day to day about paying their bills. They don't worry about acquiring this acquisition of stuff, which I think takes us further and further away from our essential nature. I know, just for example, I was, I was out a few weeks ago, and I visited some friends of mine who live, you know, who were camping anyway for a while in a one of those fifth wheel travel trailer things, actually by Caddo Lake. And we had a big fire outside, and it was beautiful. And you just felt like you were one with the elements, you know. And I'm thinking, what a simple, wonderful life. And I think the less we acquire and the more we can appreciate nature and live in nature, the happier you will become. Whereas our society has seemed to condition us to think the opposite, you know, because I guess our economy is based on commerce and people buy things, and in order for our commerce to thrive, we have to all buy stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think that we need to sit back and disconnect from that and rethink that and say, well, you know, I can choose not to do that. I can choose to live simply, live in a, you know, fifth wheel and feel like I'm camping out every night and live in the elements and go fishing and, you know, not have to worry about jobs or whatever, but read a book. I can, you know, I can download it on my Kindle and I don't have to have stacks of this and stacks of that. And I think that people can live a happier life, but that's not what we've been taught. It's not what we've been conditioned. And maybe that's what Sasquatch is trying to teach us in order for us not to destroy ourselves.
You know, it's very interesting. I agree. Because I watch these shows, Mountain Men, and there's a new one that just came out, Alaskan Bush Family or something like that, where they're just living off the land. And I watch these shows, and I'm like, I envy them because, you know, mm-hmm. they're out there and they're doing it. The only time they have any problems is when the government steps in
mm-hmm.
and tries to dictate where they should live and where they should have their houses and, you know, things of that nature. But I think it's awesome the way they're living. I compare that to Sasquatch because, in mm-hmm. my opinion, they're living the way that we should be living. And I'm not talking about
mm-hmm.
out in the woods, bare ass naked. I'm just talking about at one with our environment.
Right. Exactly.
But
exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's the whole mystery that draws you into it. And you know, mm-hmm. the one thing that I tell people is, you know, if you haven't gotten out there yourself at night, you don't know mm-hmm. what you're missing. You don't, because
I
it
know.
Is so, and Melissa can tell you, it is so gorgeous out there with the moon light shining
mm-hmm.
through the woods.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, you get a lot of these, what I like to call couch researchers, who never,
mm-hmm.
who live in the city or never get out of their home, and they try
right.
to tell you everything about a Sasquatch. And you know, it just
right.
comes to the point, just like, do you even go out into the woods? You know, you just
mm-hmm.
reach that
mm-hmm.
point where you want to say, do you even go out into the woods at all?
Right.
You've actually
right.
said that to a few people.
Yeah. Yeah. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I said before, everyone has their belief. Everyone has their idea of what a Sasquatch is, what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of us know. There are no experts on Sasquatch
mm-hmm.
until
mm-hmm.
one is either captured and studied or a body. You know, we don't know their habits. We speculate
mm-hmm. right.
based on brief encounters that are reported.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they could be cannibalistic. You know, they could be these fierce creatures. We don't really
right.
with 100% certainty know much of anything about Sasquatch other than
right.
those brief encounters that either we've had or that other people have had. And you got to also take
mm-hmm.
in consideration that most of those encounters aren't going to be 100% factual. So that even
yeah.
reduces it down even more to what we know about these. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, reduces down
right
to a less amount of what we know about these beings.
Right.
So, you know, for someone to come on and say, well, I know this, you don't know anything. No one knows other than what they've experienced or what they've read or heard. You know, when I say no, I mean with 100% certainty, monitoring these beings over an extended period of time.
Right.
Scientifically, of course. And that may happen.
Right.
Event of one day, mm-hmm. It hasn't happened yet that we know of.
Right, right.
So, you know, to come on and claim, for someone to come on and claim, oh, I'm an expert in Bigfoot or Sasquatch, really, do you live with them? How are you an expert, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that's
well, and also, I don't think it's going to, I just think instinctively it's not going to be technology that finds or discovers Bigfoot. Yeah.
Okay.
I just don't think.
Elaborate on that if you
can. I think they are. I think that they are so instinctively smart that they have learned how to evade and elude technological, you know, like
yeah.
the cameras, like the game cameras that are set up. Somehow they know how to elude. And I have read, I think that that's where this ultrasound and infrasound come in. I think they're able to pick that up, and they're able to evade. They're able to be evasive on that. Because I think they are smart enough to figure out, and justifiably smart enough to figure out that, you know, that they're... There
if
are people out there who are hunting them.
Right. If they're nocturnal, then they have to instantly have better vision than we do. Who knows what spectrum of light they can actually see. You know, they
right.
might even be able to see IR lights. You know, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it's all speculation
mm-hmm.
at this point.
But I do think that they have the innate capability of sensing that there are people, and there are groups of Sasquatch researchers, if you really, now they won't come out and say it, but when they start talking that they have to have a specimen and they go out and hunt for a specimen, they're going to hunt to kill,
I don't
you know,
condone that.
Allegedly
I don't condone
for that. No, I don't at all. I wouldn't have anything to do with anybody or any group that even,
it's,
you know, smacked of or even hinted at that. But when they start talking specimens, like there needs to be a specimen harvested, you know, for science, to prove to science, I think that's, excuse my language, but I think that's bullshit. I think
yeah.
that they want to go out and harvest a specimen for money.
For their own glory.
They are
that's
greedy.
Correct. That's exactly right.
And for
and
their own glory.
The
and I don't want to have anything to do with them. I abhor that. I think it's wrong. I think it's morally wrong. And I think it's despicable.
That's
and
the
I would
wrong.
Not even watch a TV show that even had killing in the title. Killing anything. No.
That's the problem that we run into surrounding Sasquatch. That's why there's so many fakers. There's so many hoaxes.
Oh, yeah.
That's mm-hmm. why it's so hard to pin down what is true fact about these beings. It's because
right.
the root of it all is money. Because people, when there's
that's
money
it.
Involved, that's when you get the corruption. People want that money.
And they won't say that. They won't say.
Oh,
so you have to
not.
Watch out. Some of these researchers, they're very knowledgeable, and they know a lot about. But you have to watch taking them out or showing them a territory where you've maybe seen one, because they'll go out there with the intent to kill what they, yeah. You know, they're gonna kill what they find, and they're going
to
do it for their own, like you said,
see,
glory
to
and
me,
money.
Right. To me, it makes no sense to say, I have to kill something to prove that it lives. You know, that's
right.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. And yeah. So.
And you know.
That's where I stand on that, and I feel like our movie does not in any way support or condone that at all. In fact, I think it's quite the opposite. When people see it, I think they're going to find it's quite the opposite.
Right. You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of debate about whether Sasquatch are violent or not. And you know, my answer to that is not any more so, in my opinion, than other creatures would be. You know, any creature, any animal, you go on their territory, they're going to get violent. You get too close, they're going to get violent. You come near their young, they're going to get violent.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
But there's also that percentage of, you know, of ones that could be more wild than others, ones that are not quite used to human activity. There could also be,
right.
I mean, there could be mental illnesses associated with Sasquatch, the same as humans, same as any other animal.
Right.
And think about this, you know, if you're a Sasquatch and you're out in the woods, you know, the pickings of mates are going to be pretty slim, so you can pretty much bet there's going to be some inbreeding going on.
Right, which probably accounts for the differences that you see, you know. And, I think evolution, probably, you know, adaptability to different environments, you know, probably accounts
for
some of that, too. You know, inbreeding and adaptability.
Well, around Falk, there was reports of Sasquatch having three toes. I know that some of the areas down in Florida, Skunk Ape is reported to have that also. Now, anybody that knows animals in general or biology in general will know that. How can I put this? You can walk better on mud with three toes than a whole foot, because those toes have the capability of splaying out and getting more surface coverage.
Right, and that's the three-toed Sasquatch were the ones that the footprints that were found in central Louisiana too, where we went to do some research. So. That would be in keeping with that. There's a lot of swampy areas.
Yeah, exactly.
Swampy, marshy.
That's my point. Yeah, that's exactly the point that I'm trying to convey here, is that perhaps that is an adaptation due to that environment.
Right.
The wet, marshy, swampy, muddy environment.
Exactly.
It's similar to, say, someone being up in the mountains and walking in snow with their feet, as opposed to walking in snow with a snowshoe.
Exactly. So.
But, Debbie, I appreciate you coming on, hon. And,
I've enjoyed it thoroughly, and I'm excited about all the possibilities and interviews and everything that we can do to enhance our director's cut DVD with these people coming forward that are willing to be interviewed with their experiences in the corridor of where we were shooting our film.
I'm gonna repeat that too, guys. If you're in the North Texas, Falk, Arkansas area, and you've had an encounter, get with me. If you want your encounter to go at the end credits of the film, get with me. I'll put you in touch with Debbie, and we'll see about getting that to happen. Is that okay with you, Debbie?
Oh, that's perfect. That would be great.
And
we want our director's cut. We want everyone who has supported us and who is supporting us now, and who, you know, done the pre-orders, and you know, they that want to be a part of the filmmaking process. Because, like I said, the people that pre-order the DVD now actually get their name as a special thanks on the film as being part of our test audience, because we send them, like, the 11-minute teaser. We're going to be sending them our little teasers.
Oh, cool. So my name's
going to
be on the first one?
Videos. Yes, absolutely. You get special thanks on the film. Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
Yes.
And
of course.
I look forward to the sequel. This is
bringing our audience in to be a part of the filmmaking process. And so, in a sense, everybody gets to be a filmmaker here because they get to tell us how the samples that we send in impact them. They get their name on the movie plus their name on the credits on our website. We have a credit roll on our website, and we have the credits on the Internet Movie Database on our Skookum, the Hunt for Bigfoot page, and our Skookum Facebook fan page. So they get their name up in lights as being part of this film just by, you know, being part of our test audience and pre-ordering the DVD. And patiently waiting for your actual cut DVD to come out. And we do appreciate that.
That is so awesome. And I'm so looking forward to actually getting over there and getting in that suit and being in that second, the sequel.
Oh, yeah.
So
I can't wait. Because I think once this one comes out, I do think that we're going to have a lot of people that are going to be excited about this movie. And I think that's going to support us being able to make our second movie, because we have really learned how to film these movies and get what we need on a much lower budget than what you would normally think you would have to do. We've kind of learned the tricks and the ropes of the trade and to be able to do that. Although I would have to say I would not do it on as low a budget as we did last time. That was a little bit too tight, but still low budget.
I'm so glad that you did do it that way as opposed to going Hollywood with it.
Oh, no. We want to keep control of the project. We don't want anybody in suits telling us that we have to do this and we have to do a slasher scene in the beginning. You know, I'm not interested in that at all. I want to keep control of this project and the control of the next one and be able to have the freedom to create what we want and what we feel like our audience wants. So we are working hand in hand with our fan base, our audience, our platform to keep our finger on the pulse of what everybody wants and what our vision is.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. I'm glad you came back. Guys, listeners, we're going to have Debbie, and we're going to get Mr. Mike on also, Mike Woolley. He had something come up tonight. He couldn't be on tonight, but he's going to be back as soon as everything gets worked out. And Debbie, let me know. I know you will, but let me know, and we're going to keep everyone updated on what's going on and the progress.
Okay, that sounds great, and I appreciate you inviting me back to be on, and look forward to being on again.
Oh, of course, son. Thanks again. You have a nice night. I'll talk to you
soon. Okay, thank you so much, Brian.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was cool. I'm excited about that. What I'm going to do now, Melissa, you still good?
I'm still here.
What I'm going to do now is I'm going to take some calls. And you guys, you want to call in and talk? Let's call in and talk Bigfoot. You want to share a story? Call in and let me know. I think that I have my North Texas guy on the line right now. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Who's this?
Hi, this is Johnny, North Texas. How you doing?
Hey, Johnny. This is my guy, Johnny Holmes. He's in North Texas, and he's going to be running the North Texas division of Honest Nights Paranormal. It's going to be a cryptid division. Correct, Johnny?
That's correct. I'm very excited about it.
And, Johnny, I got to apologize to you because, you know, I plan to have everything much more congealed and working before now. But as you know, I messed up my shoulder pretty bad, and it kind of set me back. But what we're going to do is we're going to open up a new Facebook group for that particular division, and Johnny's going to be running that. And I'll post everything on the Onyx Nights Paranormal page that we have up right now. And that should be within the next week. I kind of started on it a little bit today, but I wasn't able to get the graphic work done that I really, really want done. Johnny, go ahead, if you will, man, and tell everybody where exactly you're located and where you're going to be specializing in.
Well, I'm located in Fort Worth, Texas, actually, and there's not very many Bigfoot sightings around here, and that's kind of what I don't like, is that I just can't go out just anytime I want to. But I've been I've got some relatives in the Falk area and Texarkana area, and we've been going up there and doing some investigating and having some luck with vocalizations, and I've even been gifted once, and that was very exciting. But we seem to have some kind of activity every time we go there, so I'm kind of going to be specializing in that area. However, there's a couple of places I'd like to check in Oklahoma and maybe Louisiana also.
And you definitely got to come over here to Mississippi.
Yes, I'm planning a September trip to come to Mississippi.
Yeah, Melissa's on the air also. It's Melissa's property where we had got the roar from. So it's good. Melissa, when he comes down, we're going to be going back in that area again.
Okay.
Except I've mentioned it to you before. But, yeah, for the most part, Johnny, Melissa, you've lived here longer than I have. Can you try to explain what the topography is like around here? It's a lot of woods. A lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, it's very wooded in this area.
And there's I'm sorry, go ahead.
In the area that you live in that I live.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's a lot of fields, cotton fields, soybean, peanuts, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of woods. I mean, Johnny, you saw the pictures that I had posted of my area a few weeks back.
Yeah, I did, and it looks very inviting.
Let me tell you, there's not too many times that I go out that I don't get something happen. You know, mostly it's audio. I have to admit, for those listening, you know, I don't see a Sasquatch every time I go out. I don't get audio every time I get out, but I do get audio, some type of vocalization, or wood knock, or howl, something every time I go out. Not every time. I apologize. Not every time I go out. But it happens pretty frequently, and you know, I go out different times of the night, sometimes early evening, sometimes mid morning, sometimes early morning. It all depends on, you know, what kind of mood I'm in at that time. But I mean, I go out, hell, y'all know, I go out at least once a week.
Yeah, and I've heard people say that you might go out for years and not ever get anything, and my thought to that would be you're just going to the wrong place, because either that or I'm extremely lucky, because every time I've gone, I've heard at least the howl.
Gone. If you know what to listen for, I mean, Melissa, when she first started with me, Melissa, you didn't know too much about it, right? But
not really.
But now it's like she knows certain sounds, and she knows mm-hmm. what they are. And
I really didn't know any sounds whatsoever whenever I went out at first.
Yeah, I think Melissa was kind
really
of a skeptic.
Maybe
yeah.
a little bit, but I don't know. I've always been like really curious about all of it. But after we heard the roars, whenever I really went to researching sounds and stuff, and I still haven't got to get into, you know, really listening to a lot of different sounds. I don't have time, but you know, I went on and did some research onto different sounds and the wood knocks and stuff like that.
And
so
one sound
I've heard y'all mention this before on the show, plus I've heard other people that I've talked with that, but, you know, even if you do go out and you don't hear anything, if you're with friends or people of like beliefs and stuff, you're always going to have a good time anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, of course. It's beautiful out there.
It is, and it's worth, to me, I just get out there and I'm so relaxed. Now, the first couple of times, I was scared, and that's a normal reaction for anybody, I think, if you are facing the unknown. And the very first time I went, if I can give you all a little background, we were at the Mercer Bayou, and we had been there. We went on Friday, or actually Thursday, and came back on Sunday. And we thought there was so many crickets and frogs and all that stuff, and you hear those, and you're trying to tune them out and see what you can hear beyond. But a lot of people said there's no sounds when the Bigfoots are around. And Sunday morning, right before we left, like 4:45 in the morning, we just heard this big, long howl answered by two howls farther back in the woods. It sounded like the biggest one was less than 200 yards from my tent.
Every time I've been back there on Melissa's property, and even when Melissa went with me, and even during the day, there's no sounds at all back there. You know, it's dead quiet. And in fact, the other night, Melissa, when I went to your house and then I went out there,
mm-hmm.
it was dead quiet. It was so eerie. And it's weird because I go other places and it's not like that. You know, you've got the crickets, you've got the frogs. The last one I went to right near my house, a damn whippoorwill, I assume it was a whippoorwill, followed me pretty much the whole walk. That's got to be curious now that I'm thinking about it. But anyhow, you know, but back there on that property behind Melissa's, dead quiet. Nothing. I mean, nothing. No sounds at all. I mean, the only thing you hear is an occasional stream here and there that you have to pass. But, and that's what made that particular roar so frightful, because it was only like 50 yards from us. We had already passed that location. And, Melissa looked it up on online. She listened to many, many different sounds, did a lot of research, and the closest in her mind and in mine that she found was a gorilla. And see, you know, around here, the only main thing that we really have to worry about is what, coyotes, right, Melissa?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that and your mysterious white panthers.
Yeah, that. People say don't live here, but they've been seen.
Yeah.
But you know, this was nothing like any of that.
Mm-mm.
This because we listened to all these other sounds. We listened to sounds of animals native to America. We listened to sounds of animals that could be native to Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Bear, even though they're not bear. Panther. We listened to all those sounds, and the closest we found was a gorilla, and it's just one particular aggressive roar that it did. And it was, that night was just so, it was over the top. That's the only way I can put it. You know, when you hear one like that, for me, I can't get it out of my head. I hear it every time I think about it.
Yeah, I understand. Sometimes I can't remember what I had for breakfast, but I remember that first owl like it was yesterday. And I like everybody else, I was hooked when I saw Legend of Boggy Creek when I was 12 years old. And I've never really got serious into going and doing any research or anything, though, until last year. And so I'm still pretty new at it, but once I heard that howl, I knew that wasn't a wolf or anything, a coyote or nothing. It was real guttural and started real low and went to a very high pitch. And then the other two answered it. And that time, I wasn't scared. You know, I said, my friend Greg that usually goes with me. We were in the tent together, and I woke him up. And he said, I heard it. And so we just went outside to see if we could see anything. And, of course, that probably ran it off because we heard the howl two more times and the answer two more times, but each time they were getting farther away from us. But
right.
After that, I could not wait to get back out there again. And, but the next two times, I'll admit this on the air, I don't admit it a lot, I guess, but I was scared, just almost terrified when the sun
was
down.
You get that feeling.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it was watching those silly TV shows like Monsters and Mysteries in America where they're trying to make them out to be bloodthirsty and all this other stuff. And, you know, we don't really know, but with my experience, they're not anything like that. And the thing that stopped me from being scared was the gifting that I got. It seemed like the gift was just like a message saying, calm down, we're not going to hurt you or anything. And ever since then, I've been okay. So, of course, I'd still be scared if I went out in the woods and probably heard what you heard. I mean, it's just that little automatic response that you get.
But
it did.
Yeah, but it really didn't sound threatening or like an attacking type roar. It sounded more like if you were somewhere and someone snuck up on you and you didn't realize they were there and you kind of went whoa. Yeah, that's kind of the type of roar that it was. Like we surprised it. That's the impression I got. Now. You know, for those people who are interested in starting this or doing this, you know, the advice that I have is learn your local animals first. Learn your local animal sounds first. Because if you know the sounds that your local animals that are acknowledged to exist and be there, if you know those sounds, then when you're out there and you hear something, that's one thing that you can instantly rule out.
Yes. And a lot of times there's coyote activity with it. And I've heard this on your show before also. They'll be right in the middle of some coyotes. But, we've done howl for ourselves trying to get responses, and a lot of times the coyotes will start up. And And sometimes in between their noise, you can hear something, too. But they're about the only ones that really don't just quieten up when there's one around, seems like.
Oh, yeah. Melissa, how many times have you and I gone out and we heard coyotes and we hear that other sound, that deeper other howl with it? I mean, several times.
When we heard the major howl later on that night, we heard coyotes. And
yeah.
We even heard what sounded like a coyote being attacked.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was like the coyote was screaming.
I've never heard a coyote do that in my life.
Mm-mm. I never have either.
I wonder if...
And that's when I really, really got scared sitting on that deer stand. Because I'm like, okay, we heard something roar, and now we hear a coyote getting... Sounds like it's getting ripped apart, so obviously this thing is bad. You know, it can do some damage. That's the impression that I got then. And I'm like, my legs are sitting there dangling over the side of this deer stand, and I just felt something was going to come along, grab my leg and yank me down.
I guess you've heard the story about Stacy Hudson that was in the deer stand, and the one reached up and he was bow hunting and grabbed one of his arrows.
It touched his broadhead,
yeah.
and he thinks it cut itself. I heard that story. It was on Monster Quest or something, I believe.
Yeah, it was. I think it was called a Swamp Ape or something. What's that name of the episode? I think Swamp something. So I got to meet him a couple of months ago. He's really an interesting guy.
Well, I had talked to Lyle Blackburn, and I was going to try to get him on the show next week, but he had some schedule conflicts and whatnot. He's in the middle of promoting some stuff, so he won't be able to be on next week. But he did say that he will get back with me and we'll schedule a show here in the future. We've got a caller on the air. You guys stay on. I'm going to go ahead and switch over and. Hello, caller.
Hey, This is Brian in Texarkana. Hey, everybody.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
It's going good. Good to hear this with Johnny. I mean, it sounds like a match made in heaven because Johnny sure does run a tight ship. I was part of his, his camping expedition last time he was in Falk. Well, southwest of Falk. So I'm excited to hear that.
Well, that's what we're going to be doing. Johnny's going to be taking the helm of the Onyx Knights Paranormal Cryptid Division out of North Texas over there. And he's going to be looking for, you know, obviously he's going to need help. So,
well, you know, I'm there for you, Brian, Johnny. Ain't no doubt about it.
I believe Brian in Mississippi sent you an invitation to the group. So,
I don't know if you guys heard, but Debbie, a while ago, she wants to get people to tell their encounters. She wants to put it in the end credits of the movie. But she wants it from that area. So whatever encounters, Brian, I know you're a little bit closer, right?
Right. Yeah, I'm 15 minutes north of town.
Get up with me because Debbie, what she's wanting to do is she's wanting to add as many interviews and so forth to the end credits, but she wants it from that same area. You know, she don't want people from Washington contacting her about an encounter. She wants it specifically, you know, with the Falk, Boggy Creek area. So
okay.
If you're interested in that, let me know. I'll put you in contact. And that goes for you too, Johnny. If you guys are interested in doing a interview, getting a little airtime at the end credits of the movie, let me know. And, sorry, guys.
Yeah.
I just kind of popped my shoulder again.
Wow.
But, yeah.
Man, I was going to say the last time, me and Johnny hadn't talked much about it, but, I mean, last time we were down there, the group, you know, Greg and Arlie and a couple of guys were all over there doing their thing, and we were just hanging out by the river, right? Right by the Sulphur River. And right across from where we were, there is nothing other than woods and not people. And we heard almost described as a young juvenile girl, I don't know, you know, 15, screaming. And we really, right, Johnny, we looked at each other like, okay, that's funny, ha-ha. But then it kept going on, and we kind of looked and kind of narrowed down where it was coming from, and there was nobody over there. I mean, there was nobody on the other side of the river. This river was up. There's no houses over there, and it went on for, I guess, about a half a dozen times.
Well, see, about 2 weeks ago, I know you guys remember when I posted those pictures daytime when I went walking down this, scouting out that one area. Well, that day, I was out there, and I swear I heard, I couldn't make out any words or anything, but it sounded very much like a female voice. So much so that I actually walked around looking. I was saying, hey, I heard that out there in the woods. And now, I mean, I could, guys, when you come down, I could take you to where I was. You know, I'm at least 5 miles into the woods. And it kind of freaked me out. And I'm like, you know, and your mind starts playing these games on you where you're like, okay, was that a bird? Could that have been a bird? Could that have been, you know what I'm saying? You start kind of trying to rationalize what it could have been. And then you eventually still come to the same conclusion that you don't know exactly 100% what it was. But it's so odd because what I heard was a female. I couldn't make out any words or anything, but you know, almost like if a mother was to holler at her kid from across the yard. That's kind of what it sounded like, and I just found it real, real peculiar because I was the only one out there, and I go way, way back in there where I know no one could find me. So, you know, was it a Sasquatch? I don't know. I'm not saying it was, but was it something unusual? Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, Go ahead, John.
Kind of a funny story for you from our last expedition. We went out, and we had a practical joker in the group named Arlie. Funny. We had a specific tent. It was one of those shower tents, and we was using it as the facilities. And he put a toilet paper roll in there that had a recorder in it. And before he went, he recorded Bobo from Finding Bigfoot doing a howl and put it on that toilet paper roll. So when you pull the toilet paper, that thing would howl. Mm. And we played the practical joke on the first person that went in there. And then after that, everybody knew about it. So he brought that thing out and played it. And, you know, it was like 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And we were listening to it and playing around with it. And it went off. And then we heard something in the background that answered it. So we were actually having more luck using that thing as a call than doing it ourselves.
Well, you know what? I've said this before, and I know Melissa is aware of this too. We have had more luck going out there completely silent as opposed to going out there, because we can go out there and we can hear howls in the distance and whatnot, and the minute I do a vocal or do a howl, everything goes dead quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It almost like it gives us away, and they're like, psh, they just cut it all off. And when we go out there and we don't make any sounds at all and just walk and listen, it's just steady. I mean, you can hear it, but it's almost like the minute we make those calls, it's like they shut up. Like, oh crap, who's that? Let's get quiet.
Yeah.
Like they go into hide mode.
We've done that also. We just sit around the campfire. They're curious, so we just sit around the campfire talking, just like regular people, and talking and not howling, not doing anything, and we'll get sounds doing that.
Well, you guys know, I know Melissa knows, because she only lives about 20 minutes from me, but I live right on a wildlife refuge, and I went over there the other day, and I got some real good maps. I'm going to try to scan them and put them in onto my page, but there's a lot of areas that I didn't know were there. They're called primitive campsites. Now, they have the main campsite, which is by the lake, but they have what's called primitive campsites, where you just go out there with a tent, build your own fire. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, that's why we have a bathroom.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, what was that?
I said that's why we have a bathroom tent, because we like to go to those places that don't have, that are away from everybody.
Exactly. Though, here's the thing. Though I do believe, and Melissa has walked around this lake with me at night too, I do believe that they frequent that camp area looking through garbages and whatnot for scraps. But I'm going to be getting me a little one- or two-man tent, and I'm going to be going out there solo to these primitive campsites and trying to – because, see, here's the thing, guys, about where I live. And, Melissa, you can vouch for this. No one else is doing it.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No one else is out there. No other human being is out there at night. You know, and like I told you guys, like in my post, I spoke to my friend who is actual law enforcement, forestry law enforcement of this entire region. And it was a funny story, funny situation. My girlfriend's mom was pulling up back there on a gravel road to drop me off, and she has a brand new Dodge Charger, and so he saw that car and he pulls in, and I got out and he saw me and he instantly knew everything was cool, but he said that he was wondering what a car like that would be doing going down that road. So we got to talking, and he's like, man, he's like, there's so many reports from this area. I'm like, really? I'm like, I haven't seen any. I'm like, where are they at? Because, you know, I haven't seen them online or anything like that. He's like, you're not going to. You know, it was basically off the record. That's, you know, I'm not going to give his name. But he's like, you're not going to. He's like, but believe me, there are reports coming from this area. And, you know, we talked a little bit more. He said anytime I wanted to be out there, I had special permission from him to be out there. And if anybody called, he'd know instantly it was me. But that was really cool because I live – I'm pretty sure it's because I live right here and they see me all the time, and you know, I talk to him all the time, and he's actually a good friend of mine. But when you guys come down, man, we have free reign.
Wow.
You know, that's we fantastic. Can go we can go back up in there where I know that no other person is supposed to be at night. We can go back up in there, and Melissa, you know this. You've mm-hmm. talked to the guy with me. Yeah, I mean, I can take you guys to places that I promise you no other human being will be around. And see, that right there in itself eliminates a whole lot for me.
Mm-hmm. And Brian, you know, I don't know if it's still this way. I haven't lived in Mississippi for about 3 years. Grew up on the Gulf Coast. I talked a little bit about this. I've lived in Hattiesburg. Generally, until I moved to where I'm at now, Mississippi, other than the few spots like you people like you, generally speaking, there's not a whole lot of people even concerned with this subject over there. There's a few. I mean, and I'm sure you know them. But am I still correct in stating that? So, in other words, yeah, you're not going to have public, you know, in the newspaper, public acknowledgement of anything. It doesn't seem like to me.
Well,
it's like, go ahead.
Well, it's like this. This is what people are like, oh, how can there be Bigfoot in Mississippi? It's like, you obviously have not been to Mississippi to see all the woods that are here. And one of the best recordings of a Sasquatch is called the Mississippi Howl. Hello. It came from Mississippi. There's DNA evidence that's being examined right now that came from Mississippi.
Right. Man, there is no way to explain it other than what? You got 10 fairly big cities. That's it. You got rural areas, and there's trees and pine trees for miles upon miles upon miles upon miles, and lakes
yes.
and whatever. That's it.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of, Melissa, there's a lot of little streams and ponds mm-hmm. and lakes and little
yeah.
tributaries. I mean, if you looked at any of the pictures that I posted, you'd see, you know, how much water access. And I mean, I could take you guys to there's one area that I went to about 2 years ago where me and my girlfriend's daughter heard the chatter language. And this is off any roads. This is actually walking through the woods. There's an area that's it's huge. It's you can even see it on, you know, Google Maps or whatever. It, on the maps, it looks like a pyramid, but what it is these big, huge mound, and it's got like little cliffs and there's a huge ravine cutting all the way around it. I mean, this ravine's so huge that you can walk through it and not even touch the top. And I actually took a picture of my girlfriend's daughter on a log, a big log that goes across the ravine. And the ravine is at least 20 feet deep. And I want to get back to that area because I really feel that they're back up in there. Because her and I had heard the chattering murmur coming from around that area. And if you play the Sierra Sounds, the Samurai talk, that's exactly what it sounded like.
Yeah, I've heard that before too.
But
I've heard it, the recordings.
I mean, all these areas, guys, are within walking distance of where I live. I mean, like I said, Melissa lives about what 20, 30 minutes away from me, but she can tell you mm-hmm. where I live at is prime location.
Maybe we should just make our base camp in your front yard or something and just walk to different places.
That's pretty much. they can pretty much do that, huh, Melissa? I mean, I'm surrounded by woods. I'm surrounded by woods. My whole backyard is woods. There's a huge ravine at the edge of my property. I mean, I'm pretty much surrounded by woods. The only thing that really separates me is a highway, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know...
I'm also looking forward to you coming over to our neck of the woods and letting us show you around the Falk area there. And,
oh, I want to. Yeah. I want to so bad. I mean, you guys know, I've even talked to Melissa about it. I want to go there so bad. And Melissa had never seen the movie, The Legend of Boggy Creek, and I sent it to her the other day. Were you able to watch that yet or not?
Not yet.
Well, other than not being shaky or whatever, you ride down there, and, you know, new pavement, it ain't a whole lot different. I'm going to tell you straight up. It is what it is. You look at that movie.
That's what I was worried about was how much it may have changed. But yeah, man, I definitely want to get over there. Hopefully, Melissa can go when I go. I know I'm going to be going that way for when it comes time to shoot the sequel for Skookum. So it's going to be exciting. Yeah.
I hope to get you over there before then so I can show you around and get you kind of acclimated to the area because it's kind of like your place. There's so many different places we can go set a campsite there. Most of them, so.
I mean, at this point, the main thing is getting me there, you know?
Yeah.
But man, you know, there's so much going on, so many exciting things. I'm so happy to be involved in all of this. And you know, I'm really humbled because, you know, I started this whole thing kind of on a whim. I'd always been into, you know, Sasquatch. I had sightings when I was younger, and I started all this. And you guys, people have just come, have kind of been, and I'm not trying to brag at all or anything, but people have just come to me. You know, been drawn to me, and to me, I'm honored because you guys understand what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. People are drawn to genuine people. There you go.
Yeah.
You get me? You're genuine, and that's why next week you've got another guest and all that. That's you know, you're genuine. That's why people are drawn to you. That's it.
Yeah, and you can. You're a no BS kind of guy, and.
Mm-hmm.
You don't treat everybody like you're better than they are because you've seen something or, you know, that other stuff. So people like that, you know, that's who I like to hang out with.
Melissa is one of my best friends.
Said, oh, I've seen Sasquatch and you don't know what you're doing and you're doing it wrong and all this other stuff. He says what's wrong. You know, nobody knows nothing. So
Melissa is like my best friend, and she can tell you that I'm the exact same way in person. About everything. I don't beat around the bush. I don't bullshit. I'm brutally honest.
Well, you know, there's a draw in this area, and Johnny, you know, got to go meet Smokey Crabtree. I mean, that fellow's 87 years old. You just never know, but I'm just saying.
He was in movie, The Legend of Boggy Creek. He was a young boy.
Well...
He was
the legend, you know, the trapper and all that. I guess his son is the one that actually had the sighting with the shotgun and all that.
In the movie, wasn't Smokey Crabtree the young boy that rode the boat to the hermit's house?
No,
that was his son, Travis.
Travis, you guys are right, I'm sorry.
And then another son is the one that had the sighting and had shot at it and everything. But Smokey was portrayed in there a little bit. But my bottom line is, you know, most times you kind of have to buy his books and all when you go see him, but he'll talk to you if he's feeling good. He'll talk to you for hours. You know, Johnny and him got to meet him, so it's a good it's a good thing to go down there soon. If you can.
Yeah, I was very honored to get to meet
him. There's so many people that I want to meet, so many people who want to meet me from that area. You know, I know Lyle's in that area as well. You guys, there's a couple others that are in that area. So yeah, it's gonna be a good time. You know, it's just a matter of
It's like I told you one time. All you got to get there is All you got to do is get there. We got the equipment and pretty much everything you need. So.
Oh, it's going to happen. I mean, you guys know it's going to happen. And you know, I mean, you guys know me well enough by now to know I don't care. I'll sleep in the damn tent out in the yard. it don't matter to me, you know. That's
part
of doing. But next week I'm gonna have a guest on here. His name is Jeff Stewart.
Right.
And Brian, I think you hooked me up to him.
Yeah, and I'm within 2 weeks of going to camp on his property, and I'll just hopefully I'm trying my best to listen in, but hopefully he tells you everything there is to tell. I won't give anything away because that is one interesting, knowledgeable individual. And
oh yeah, he does trapping. I read a little bit of his bio.
Yeah. I hate to even say anything because it'll be such a fun show to have that all discovered. But I've been there before. I've camped with him before. He has access, in essence, to almost 1,000 acres. It's ridiculous. It has a river running through his property. Nobody goes on his property. You know, there's no doubt when something's going on, which it has, and I'll let him tell you about all that. There's no doubt that it's real because it's a very isolated part of Texas. It's kind of 2 hours south of here, Kenny Hall. It's really isolated, very small town. And
yeah, he's an expert tracker and trapper. I'm really wanting to talk to him.
that'll be a great show. I promise you that. Yeah.
That's awesome. We got about, hold on, let's see. We got about 13 minutes left tonight. Things are, you know, like I said, things are coming together really, really well. I've got a friend that lives in Oregon who's wanting to open up a division of Mahonix Knights Paranormal up there as well. I'm sorry?
So I sure would like to go up there for an expedition too.
Wow!
Oh
yeah.
Man, I can go up there anytime. Really, all I got to do is, you know, get in touch with them and give the word. There's no problem there at all. I mentioned too. We talked a little bit about him opening up a division team up there. I haven't heard anything more from him in the last couple of days. I guess he's busy or whatever, but I'm really hoping to get that. And that's what I kind of want to do, man, is if we can have divisions in some of the best locations, you know, in the United States and inevitably around the world for cryptid or Sasquatch research, then that's like every one of us extending our reach even further. You know, as one collective group, and you know, because we're all in it together. We're all looking for the same answers. You know, so
you know, Johnny said something earlier that was quite so real and so honest. The fact that you know, I've seen some people post like, "What happens if somebody actually finds a Bigfoot and?" It's discovered. Well, you know, I don't know at that point. But the getting there is the fun part. The getting there is still having the experiences, like Johnny was saying, still being able to camp and do the fun things in nature and, you know, be safe and have comrades. You know, that's the thing. That's the number one thing.
I would rather go, and I've told Melissa this, I've told Melissa this several times. I'd rather go out in the woods, Sasquatch. I don't want to say hunting, but exploring. Than ghost hunting any day.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, me too. Of course, I've never been ghost hunting, so I can't really compare the two. But I've got a feeling
I have Sasquatch. It's not all it's cracked up to be, but you know. Out in the woods, there's always going to be something out there that could possibly want you for dinner. So to me, it's much more thrilling.
Yeah.
And I just love being out there. You know.
Okay.
As far as what you said, Brian, about discovering or finding Bigfoot, to many, that has already happened. I know for me, through my personal experiences, actually seeing it, it's already been discovered to me. If
right.
that makes sense to you, you know.
Well, it makes sense. I guess what they were referring to is like blasted on CNN and not just a roadshow that we saw in the last couple of years.
I'm not out to prove the existence of it to the whole world. I'm not out to prove the existence of it to me because I already know. I am, believe it or not, I want interaction with it. You know, I want to learn from it and interact with it. No, I don't want to be the next Jane Goodall, but I don't know. It's more of a personal thing for me than it is to prove it to the world. You know, it's definitely not a monetary thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know what would be interesting? And Johnny and I met this fellow too, along with Stacy Hudson. But Mike Johnson, Sasquatch Investigation of the Rockies. If you look up his website, you're talking about basically getting to know them, relationships with Bigfoot and Sasquatch, and habituate and go out there and get familiar with them. He's got a track record of years. So he might have a tidbit here and there that you might glean from his website.
Yeah, I've actually got him on my Facebook friend list, and I'll get into. You know, we have this paranormal group, Melissa and I, on tonight's paranormal. And yes, we are open to everything: ghosts, UFOs, cryptids. But for me personally, I know you guys can tell this. My personal favorite is Sasquatch. You know, I've seen a UFO. I've never seen a ghost in my life. I've seen Sasquatch, and that is my personal favorite. And I know people are probably like, "Well, why is he always talking about Sasquatch on his radio show?" Because I have in my mind, I have a bit more knowledge about that than these other categories. It's just more fun to me. It's something about it is just more exciting, you know. But yeah, I have a couple of more Sasquatch shows that I'm going to do this month. But believe it or not, there's so many people contacting me that I could go on and do Sasquatch shows for the next 2 months easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, people like that. I mean, the people that don't usually listen to shows that are more specifically geared to other realms. You know, I mean, I like you know, studying into the ghost thing and the UFO thing too, but it's not my first priority. But if I wanted to just a whole show about it, there's other ones out there, and I think people that like Sasquatch and listen to this show.
Here's the thing about Sasquatch, in my opinion, as opposed to ghosts, you don't need a whole lot of special equipment to go and investigate a Sasquatch. You know,
that's
true. All you need is a flashlight, and to go out there at night and walk these gravel roads. These trails at night, and if you listen closely, you if it's anything like where I live, you're going to hear something. You're going to have some kind of experience. Whereas with a ghost, I don't know, man.
You have to have the EVPs. You have to have video cameras. You have to have all this equipment just to possibly show that there's a little bit of proof.
Yeah, and out in the woods, you're going to experience something. You're going to hear something out in the woods. Whether it's a Sasquatch or whether it's something else, it's going to be something to get your blood flowing and to get and for you to get that adrenaline rush. And if that's the thrill that you're looking for, you're going to get it every time you go into the woods.
And with the ghost thing, you might not even get anything while you're there. You have to go back and review everything just to maybe get a little something.
And yes, and UFOs, true. I mean, you could stand outside every night for a year and never see one of them,
mm-hmm.
you know? So to me, it's more accessible, if you understand what I'm saying. It doesn't take anything to go out there and walk. I mean, all you're doing is walking through the woods, you know? Yes, the chances are better at night, but there's still chances during the daytime also.
Yes.
But the main thing is you'll never know until you do it. You know, and that's the best way I can describe it. Until you get out there and do it, you'll never know, and you'll never fully appreciate what those of us who do it, what we're talking about. It's such a great experience. It's so thrilling to be out there at night with the bright moonlight, sometimes without any moonlight. But to be out there at night doing that, not knowing what's watching you at any particular point in time. Eventually, at first you will be nervous, you will be scared, but eventually you'll get so used to it that it won't even bother you, and you'll be going by yourself. I mean, that's how it is for me, guys.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And people are like, aren't you scared being out there at night by yourself? Why? The same thing is out there at night that's out there during the day. Yeah, it might be asleep during the day, but you can bet your ass if you're close enough to it, it knows you're there anyway.
Well, the thing that scares me most about the night is not the squats or really any of the wildlife. It's more of the human element, if you can't tell, might be out there.
Yeah, that you can't see, you know.
You don't want to hear any banjo music or anything like that. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, I got you. The whole, yeah, the deliverance.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, see, I mean, you know, people ask the question, do you go out there armed? I don't carry a gun out there with me. To me, that presents a lot more dangers and a lot more variables that I don't want to have to deal with. I do have knives. I do have a machete. I do take mace. Those types of things. I know those things can deter or even stop the human element. I know it probably won't do much but piss off a Sasquatch. But that's mostly.
I like your firecracker idea too.
Yeah,
I like your firecracker idea.
Yeah, we go out there with firecrackers. Melissa, when we were out there that night, we heard something in the woods, and I set off one of the firecrackers, and the thing in the woods didn't move at all. And I don't know too many animals that's not gonna, you know, not gonna run away from a loud bang.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this: the night that you heard the roar, did you hear any footsteps with it or anything?
We kind of did. When we got to the deer stand, we kept hearing what sounded like very slow footfall around us, kind of to the back of us. But before that, before the roar, no, we didn't hear any of that.
Now, after the roar, when we were walking on further into the woods, there were... I don't know if it was exactly footfall or not, but you would hear noises coming from behind us where the noise had come from, where the roar had come from, because we both kept turning around shining our lights back there.
But we really did feel like we were being followed. Guys, the show's about to go off the air. We're going to continue talking. It's going to go into the archive. Thank you guys for listening to us. We're going to go ahead and continue our conversation. Don't forget to go and like the Facebook page for Skookum. I posted all that on my Onyx Nights Paranormal page. I posted the links to my friend Jason Sandelman and his sculptures. And we have an album full of the Creature Replica action figures that's going to be coming out in December. Check out my Facebook page, Onyx Nights Paranormal. You can find everything there that you that we talked about tonight, and I appreciate you listening. We're going to go ahead and continue our conversations. As I was saying, when we were out there, we felt like this thing was following us, and you know, we got up to the deer stand and we climbed up in the deer stand, and it, when we were up in the deer stand, we went completely lights out, though Melissa had a night vision monocular that she was looking through, which those things are okay if you know the distance that you're trying to look at.
Yeah.
If you're just there trying to scan through the woods, I mean, you have to have a distance that you can focus on. Just scanning through the woods, it sucked. I mean, you have even the trees were glowing, you know, the ones that were close to us so brightly, but we were up there, and we were up there maybe 10, 15 minutes, and that's when we heard what sounded like the coyote getting torn apart. And then another 10, 15 minutes went by, and we heard other coyotes a little further away, and they were just doing the normal coyote thing.
Correct.
Now, the time between the roar and the coyote, one coyote getting torn apart, was probably about maybe 10, 15 minutes in itself. So, you know, we kind of feel like this thing followed us in there to that area where the deer stand was, came across the coyote, whatever happened with that, and then shortly thereafter, the other coyotes maybe came in and ate the scraps. I don't know. I just know the sounds that we heard in that particular order. I'm sorry?
It's interesting. I've often heard that Sasquatch don't like dogs. And so I wonder if that's why it would tear that coyote apart like that, because they're so closely related. Or maybe the coyote's the reason that they don't like dogs.
Well, I mean, hell, if I'm out trying to survive in the woods, you know, a coyote is a pretty good meal, you know. I think it's either, there's a couple of options. Either the coyotes trail the Sasquatch and pick up its scraps, or the Sasquatch trails the coyote and picks up their scraps. One or the other, but there's definitely a correlation between those two. There's something going on there.
There is.
And it would make sense if anybody in a survival situation out in the wilderness, hungry enough, it just, to me, it makes perfect sense for them to trail a pack of coyotes, go in there, scare them off, and get the food.
Yep. So you got a lot of deer around.
And maybe the occasional coyote, you know, you might be able to catch an occasional coyote too. You know, if you're in a survival situation, you're not gonna pass up any chance you can get for food.
That's true.
But do I think that they would attack a human? I think if it was hungry enough, it's possible. But I do think that they're aware of the circumstances that come along with that.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what sets them apart from most other animals and creatures in the woods, is they have a little bit higher, a little bit more ability for logic. You know, I'm sure they've watched us numerous times. I'm sure they know there's a countless amount of humans around. I'm sure they know what the results will be, you know, for attacking one. And
right.
And I'm sure in their mind, they never know which humans have a gun and which don't. You know, again, this is all speculation because we right. really don't know.
Well, you know, I said earlier about getting a gift and thinking that it was their way of telling me not to be scared of them. I think they might have that kind of sense, like an animal does. You know, an animal pretty much knows when you're scared of it or not.
Yeah, and you know, I was just about to say something that same effect, almost like being able to look into your heart. I know that sounds really pansy, but it's almost like that, like being able to look into your heart and see what kind of person you really are.
Yeah, that's what I was telling Greg that night. I said, you know, it's like a dog knows if you're a good guy or a bad guy, I believe, and they treat you as such. I mean, they just instinctively know that you're not there to hurt them or anything like that. So, I don't think they would just jump on you out of the blue unless they knew that. That's why I have such a problem believing these guys that say they killed one, like that guy in California. I think that there's always more than one of them, I think, in an area. And I think if somebody shot one like that, then the rest of them are going to come down on them, and that would be it.
Well, where we were.
My personal opinion too.
Well, where we were, there's a trail, and then there's a wooded area, probably about a football field, and then long, and then on the other side of that is a big, big plotted field. So we kind of feel like it was in there, that area, scoping out that plotted field for deer or whatever. We also found an interesting tree with some holes in it. I had a video. I don't know if you guys saw it, but. Where we were close enough to that thing that if it wanted us, it would have had us.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt,
I mean, that's how close that roar was. We felt it.
I know that feeling too. When I was talking earlier about the footsteps, Greg and I were down in Central Texas, and we just gone walking down a road. We had gone technically squatching the night before, and this time we were just walking down the road. We didn't have no lights with us or anything, no paper quarters or nothing. And there was about a three-quarter moon out maybe, and it was enough to light up the trees enough to where they would cast a shadow. And we heard something that sounded like a man clearing his throat.
Yeah.
And we both heard it, and we both started walking back, and we kept hearing like little growls and stuff. And there was a car parked down the road a little bit, and we kept thinking it was behind the car. So we walked toward the car, and we got all the way there and never saw anything, but we kept walking a little bit farther. We were walking on an asphalt road, and around us there was leaf litter and everything under the trees.
And, right.
At one point, we just stopped walking altogether. There was a horse in a fenced area kind of off maybe 200 or 300 yards, and it was going kind of nuts, and all the dogs in the area were barking, and we were walking, and we just stopped in the road, and I kept hearing footsteps after we stopped, and it was, you could tell it was two legs, something walking on two legs, but I couldn't see anything. Man, that kind of creeped me out, but on the other hand, it was cool too. I mean, I keep looking back at that and saying, it was right there. It was close enough for us to hear it, but we never saw it. But it was cool.
You know,
cool.
Jeff and I went camping back in, I guess, March, whenever that was. We heard multiple armadillos coming through. And we know armadillos because after the fact we saw that there were armadillos. But, you know, the new people that might be listening, the thing about it is, either go with somebody who's experienced or try and dig out the lay of the land and what's there, and hopefully you'll understand what you're hearing in some cases. Because, man, I'm telling you, we heard them armadillos sounded like tanks coming through the woods.
Oh, that's so funny you say that.
So, point being, I mean, we didn't say, oh, there's a Bigfoot coming. We knew there was something coming, but I'll be dog, until they got there, we thought something gigantic was
coming.
Same
thing. Melissa, you still with me? Melissa, are you still on?
I'm still here.
The same thing happened. I went out there one night. It was me, my son, and Melissa's daughter. And we walked a new area, and those two got the crap scared out of them because there was not one armadillo, but a couple of armadillos. One was on the one side of the road, and there was another up ahead a little bit on the other side of the road, and they were freaking out. I kind of knew what it was because you could tell armadillo with the scratching.
Right.
But it kept getting closer and closer, and Melissa Caitlin was latched on to me like a leech. She was latched on to me like a leech. She's like, it's coming towards us, it's coming towards us. and then here it comes scurrying out onto the gravel road. It was hilarious. Oh, you had to be there. But, you know, that's the thing. Especially in the wintertime, the least little animal will make the loudest sound. You would not believe. So you really have to be aware of what's going on. You know, I've seen possum make some loud sounds, squirrel. And that's one reason why, one reason why I like to go out there in the winter, the fall, and the early spring mostly. Because if there is anything out there, even if it's a wildlife, if it's going to be coming towards you, you'll hear it long before it gets to you. So you have that little reaction time.
Yeah.
The leaf litter.
Yeah, whereas, like, now, I get more nervous going out there now and into the summer because, well, for one, snakes. But two, everything is green. You can't really see back up in there too good, and you don't know how close something is, and the leaf litter's not there, so you know that they can get close to you even more silently than, say, in the colder months.
Yeah, I need to get you some snake guard, brother.
Oh, man. You're not kidding. Me and Melissa were talking about that not too long ago, about how I could go about actually making some homemade. I love being out there. You guys, I just can't explain it enough or correctly to describe what I feel like when I'm out there. I mean, yeah. Debbie hit it on the head earlier when she said she just feels alive.
Yes.
You know, being out there. And that's the only way I can describe it, too. You know? Because I think what it is coming to that realization, and call it a spiritual opening or awakening or whatever, but coming to that realization that we are not the be-all, end-all of this world, you know, and out there, it hits home pretty good because you realize that you're not the top of the food chain. You are not the superior out there. Right. And it's a very humbling experience.
Well, a year ago, well, I came to where I live now about 2 years ago, but a year ago, I had a maybe footprint. I mean, it could have been a double footprint. I'll never know. I didn't cast it, but I got a great picture of it. But I've talked to Greg and Johnny about it, and thing about it is, that moment, my life changed. And, you know, before then, it was all about, oh, let's go golfing, let's go this. It's all cement and pavement and asphalt and life. That's fine. But when that happened and I started looking into things and cryptozoology, what does it really mean? So forth and so on. I met Lyle about a year ago now, Lyle Blackburn. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, then my eyes fully got opened, and it's been a life-changing experience. And, yeah, there's something discovered every week probably, you know, whatever. It's just ridiculous, and people just don't know.
Well, see, I can kind of relate to that. When I had I had three different sightings in my life in a couple of different states, but I knew that they were out there, you know, and looking back now at all the weird things that has happened to me in the woods that I just kind of passed off. It's like, well, that could have been a Sasquatch then too. But I think Melissa could relate better to that now than I can, because she had her first real experience with that roar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was, hey, for a first experience, that was a hell of a first experience. You know, that was an eye opener right there. Because I've had howls many, many, many times before, and that was the first time I had ever heard a roar. And and to have it happen at that close range, man, you know, everything happened so, it was so weird. It was like, it happened so fast, but at the same time, it was kind of in slow motion, if that makes sense. Because
life slowed down.
I remember roaring back. Well, I don't remember. I didn't remember at the time, but I remember now. But Melissa told me the next day that I had roared back at it, and then I looked at her and said, "What the hell was that sound?" And I didn't recall that until Melissa and I got to talking about what happened, you know, the next day. I didn't recall that I had done that. I'm not going to say it was some kind of hypnosis type crap. It was just a spur of the moment, you know, the adrenaline of everything that was going on. You know, people are like, well, maybe the Sasquatch hypnotized you. Whatever, you know. Go watch X-Files. It was adrenaline, you know, because when that happened, you've got so many different things going on. You got the fear, you know, like Melissa said, her first instinct was to run away. You got the fear going on. You got the disbelief of what happened. You got the joy of having that happen. All that going on at one time, and I mean, it was to me, it was awesome, you know. And I wish that, looking back, I wish I would have went over there, you know, because I shined my headlamp over there, didn't see any eye shine or anything like that. But I kind of wish I would have walked back there, but maybe it's a good thing I didn't. I don't know. You know, you're steadily contradicting yourself and what you should have done and what you could have done. You understand what I'm saying, guys? And,
right.
Yeah.
And maybe,
well,
everything went the way it did.
You know, I've been talking to Johnny just a little bit online while we've been on here, but, you know, I can't wait to, you know, help him out with this, help you out with this. I can't, you know, I'm still part of the Texas Bigfoot Research Center group. I go see Jeff. I'm doing all kinds of things, whatever I can do. It's all about experiences. And, yeah, I've got some regrets. You know, that footprint that I saw, I could have cast it. Heck, I could have did it, all kinds of things. But I had my kids with me, and I was freaked out so bad, we were practically running out of there. And
hey,
we had,
you know,
miles to go.
I learned something this week. I didn't know. Maybe you guys can confirm this, but you can get plaster of Paris at Lowe's.
I think Johnny knows about how to acquire some of that stuff.
Yeah,
somebody
said, Johnny.
I was watching a video or something, and they said that they went to Lowe's and got it.
You can get plaster of Paris there, but most of the research I've done doesn't recommend using that because it can crack over time, and you might lose, you know, it might just pick it up one day and shatter.
The recommended.
What I use is this stuff called UltraCal 30. It's a gypsum cement.
Yeah.
And they don't have it at Lowe's or anywhere. I finally found a place. You can buy it online, but they'll have to sell it in 25 or 50 pound sacks.
Bulk. Yeah.
It's ridiculous, but I finally found a place here in Fort Worth, and the only size sack I could get was 100 pounds. So I've got a 100-pound sack of that, and when we come out to see you, I'll bring you some of it because it'll take me a lifetime to use that much of it. So,
yeah, definitely. And I mean, and where did you get it from? You didn't get yours online, did you?
No, I found a place here in Fort Worth. It's called Freeman Manufacturing, and they sell like that. So that's where I got
it
from.
Next time you go, maybe ask them if they have a website.
They do have a website. Just a second. Let's see if I can, if I still got it.
Yeah, post it on the Onyx Knights Paranormal page, and you know, we'll, yeah. Or send it to me, or whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I don't know they got a website, because that's how I ended up.
See,
they have stores all over the place, and I just got lucky and happened to find the one here in Fort Worth, so I could just drive over there and pick it up. But that's the only size sack they had, was 100 pounds. So, like I said, that'll last me a lot.
While you're looking for that, Johnny, I saw somebody demonstrate, and remind me what it is, but it's that little can, and it's got the little tube, almost like WD-40. It's filler for house, like foam and a guitar.
Spray foam. You're talking about spray foam. See, I often wondered if that would work.
Man, I've seen somebody. Go ahead. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
My friend Arlie has used that stuff. He's a former police officer, and he used it. He just made a cast of his own footprint to see how well it would work, and he said it worked pretty good, but I've never tried it myself.
But see, my question is, would it pick up all the detail, like dermal ridges and stuff like that? That's what worries me about that stuff.
Well,
and that stuff, it does expand. So,
yeah,
you know. Yeah, it might not expand in the print itself, maybe just up in the top of it and whatever. I don't know. I mean, I guess I can get some and try it and see.
Well,
but what you don't want to do is you don't want to get a print that expands to unbelievable length and then, you know, hey, this is the print. You know, you understand what I'm saying?
Right. Well,
right.
The demonstration I saw, I mean, the person – it's just if you don't have the good stuff like Johnny's got, or it's like, oh, my God, I wasn't prepared, and you happen to have a can of that in there, this person sprayed it in there, and, you know, yes, you leave it set for just a little bit, and, yes, it expands on top of the ground. It doesn't expand in the depression. The depression is just there. It expands up. It doesn't expand down into the ground, so it's pretty real. But then what happened was they reverse cast it. So, in other words, they had it, and, you know, then they filled it in around it, and then they made a cast from that. So, it's doable, but it's a kind of secondary thing, and it's a quick and easy fix, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're definitely going to all get together and everything, and you guys already get together. We're working on all that for the actual... I'm sorry, guys. You know, I've had things going on. But as far as the page goes for that cryptid division over there, we're going to be working on that. I'm going to be working on that, Johnny. You guys are over there. You guys can add to it whatever you want. And we're going to get that rolling. One thing I want us to look into eventually, hopefully soon, is getting like... some shirts or something made, you know?
Mm-hmm. I like shirts. All my favorite shirts are all those Boggy Creek, TBRC, I mean, all of those. I've got all kinds of Boggy Creek stuff.
Well, right now it's just a issue of funding, but, you know, eventually that's what I want us to do and, you know, get all that going. And, I mean, there's other ideas that, you know, we're not going to talk about right here, right now on air. But eventually we'll talk about doing.
All right.
Brian, I'm sorry, Mississippi, Brian. I didn't, what were you just talking about in the funding corps? Somebody was talking to me on a computer.
Shirts. Getting shirts.
I've been in a barbershop harmony group for over 20 years, and I've got a shirt guy, so we can come up with a design. He can hook us up.
Well, I got a couple of designs. I mean, we can talk about all this off the air, of course, anytime. But, yeah, we're going to get together on all that, Johnny, and work all that. Because one thing that we want to do, I know we're just kind of kicking things off now, but – you know, the one thing we want to do as we grow and expand is just to have that professionalism to us.
Yes.
But
that's true, because I don't want people to think we're just some fly-by-night group or something.
Right. That's exactly what I'm saying. But, guys, I appreciate you calling in. Like I said, next week I'm going to have Jeff Stewart on, and you guys try it. Johnny, I don't know if you're going to have to work next week or not.
Yeah, I'm off for another week, so next week will be work week.
But I got your number now, and I think you got mine.
Yes. I think yes.
And we'll be getting together hopefully sometime this weekend.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And
ready to get the ball rolling.
I just got so much stuff. You know, I've got so much stuff going on right now. You know, the shoulder. I had some issues with my son, but I'm definitely stoked about it, especially after this here show tonight. Talking with Debbie and realizing that it's all actual coming together.
Yeah, I'm excited about seeing the movie.
And you guys, I don't know if you have other people in mind for the team over there or not. Hopefully, you know, you do.
Yeah,
and just,
we do.
Just recruit, you know.
Yeah, Greg Moorhead, me and him's grown up together, and he's always been my squatching buddy, so we're probably going to try to get him into it. You know, we've got some other people that take it pretty serious, so.
Well, invite them to the new group, and, I mean, we got to come up with, that's another thing we got to do, is come up with some rules for that new group.
Yeah.
You know? Because I don't want, I mean, my basic stand is everybody has their own belief and opinion. That's all fine, but don't insult anyone else, you know. I'm not going to be like some of these other groups where, oh, you have to believe or you know. No, right. Everybody has a right to their opinion. They're skeptic. Just don't be rude and crass to everybody.
Yep.
So, you know, just basic, simple rules.
Yes.
Because yours is Dominic's Nights Paranormal page that I have now. It's just a like page, whereas the one I set up for the cryptids is a group where everybody can make the post, kind of like the other groups that we're involved with. You know, the Bigfoot believers only, stuff like that. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wish I had done Onyx Nights Paranormal originally like that. I may eventually do one like that as well, but as soon as we get all the rules down pat and all that stuff covered, I'm going to go and link everything together so that a lot of our members on Onyx Nights Paranormal will also transfer over to the Onyx Nights Paranormal Cryptid page. So you're instantly going to be, we're instantly going to be kind of starting off with members.
Right.
So, and then we'll advertise the hell out of it.
That way, if the new guy, the guy in Oregon starts one, then we can link that in there too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He's kind of going through some crap right now, but. I mean, who isn't? But, you know, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah. It's cool. We'll take care of it.
Yep.
But,
awesome.
Yeah, he lives, I'm trying to remember, don't quote me on this, but he lives right there around, he said the mountain, one of those mountain, big, real famous Sasquatch involved mountain ranges. He told me, I'm looking at his messages right now. I'm trying to find exactly where he said. He says, we live just a few miles from the Oregon Caves and a few hours southeast of Sonoma County, where the Bohemian Grove is.
I've never been there, but I know it's pretty up there.
He says this Sasquatch encounters out the ass within a 1,500-mile radius of where he's at. So, you know, my last message to him was I sent him my phone number, and he's a friend of mine. He used to live here where I live, and he used to actually work for me when I managed a restaurant here. So, you know. It's just a matter of getting him on the ball and get him to give me a call and lining everything up correctly. But it'll happen, you know. It'll happen. We don't want to overburden ourselves too much right off.
Yeah. Go to good pace. Not too quick, not too slow.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
You get too quick and you get frustrated, for sure.
Yeah, and the one thing I don't want to happen is I don't want anybody to get burnt out.
Yeah.
You know, because it's so much all at once. That's the last thing I want. But, all right, guys, I appreciate it. We're going to go ahead and shut this down. And I appreciate everyone for listening. I know we're in the recorded portion of it now, but I appreciate everyone who listened. Melissa, you still there?
I'm still here.
Thanks, honey, for coming on and staying on with me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. Good night.
All
right. Johnny and Brian, thank you. I appreciate it, man. And
all
like
right.
I said, we'll be all getting in touch here pretty soon. Maybe what I'll do is I'll do like a group kind of Facebook message thing in a couple of days, and we'll shoot over it. Now, you know, you saw the image that I put in the Sasquatch group. It's not the final image I want to go with. It's just something that I threw in there just for now. You know, I want to have an image and a whole title kind of like what the Onyx Knights Paranormal has. You know, in all honesty, I was on a couple other groups, and I kind of got aggravated with some of the posts that I was seeing, and the bickering and the whole everybody thinking everything is Sasquatch, and I'm like, you know what? It's time for me to just make our own, you know?
Yeah, and I don't want ours to turn into that if we can help it.
Exactly. That's one reason why we got to get those rules down pat.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, on top of that, posting and doing some of those things that we like and, you know, having people follow suit, you know, saying lead by example to a degree. Because, I mean, there are some groups that, you know, when I see the news feed, I don't even really pay attention because it's just, I almost feel like I just need to get off of them. But then there's some groups, you know, it's good stuff or good questions or something you want to participate in. So having an active led by example type group that interjects things and, you know, has that good questions and good interactions, that's the groups I gravitate to. So that's good.
Yeah, and the one thing I want to put in the rules is we don't claim to know everything about these beings. We don't claim to be experts. No one is. You know, we're just giving our thoughts and our theories and our opinions, basically, it's just like everybody else, you know. So we're not going to sit here and chastise someone who has the opinion that Sasquatch doesn't exist, because that's their right. You know, that's they can believe whatever they want. I'm not trying to make people believe, you know. I'm just trying to get a place to get information, everybody come together, share information, maybe learn something better or about them and take it from there.
Right.
And to keep people posted on what you guys as the Cryptid Division are going to be doing.
Yes.
Sounds good.
So, I mean, we'll get together on all that here soon And, you know, like I said, I appreciate you guys. I appreciate what you do. I appreciate the friendship. And I look forward to making all this grow and come together and, you know, us eventually hanging out and doing all this together.
There you go.
Well, all right, guys. Thanks again.
All right.
And you guys have a good night. I'll be in touch here soon.
All right. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
And that's going to do it for us. Thank you all for listening. You guys have a great night as well.